Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair. If you enjoy binge-watching the best TV shows and love hearing from the actors and showrunners who make them happen, then subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our Hollywood reporters take you behind the scenes of the year's most anticipated projects, the industry's biggest moves, and the hardest-fought awards races. From The Crown to The Real Housewives, we've got the inside scoop. As a special thank you to our still-watching audience, we're offering 15% off a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair. Visit vanityfair.com today and use promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off a yearly digital subscription to everything you want.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring yourself back online.
No one knows what I'm thinking.
Tell us what you think of your world.
Some people choose to see the ugliness in this world, the disarray. I choose to see the beauty.
Welcome to Still Watching Westworld, an unofficial podcast about the HBO series Westworld. I'm Vanity Fair senior writer Joanna Robinson.
And I'm Vanity Fair chief critic Richard Lawson.
Each week we'll break down the latest theories, baffling questions, and hidden illusions, as well as occasionally chat with someone who has worked on the show. This week we will be discussing and only spoiling up to season 2, episode 2, Reunion, directed by Vincenzo Natali, written by Jonathan Nolan, Lisa Joy, and Mad Men writer Carly Rae, which I think was a really interesting decision for this episode.
We'll She's also a great pop star.
Yes, exactly. I just wanted to reiterate something that we said last week, which is that if you have any like feedback for us on the show, you can email us at stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. We got a lot of emails last week.
That's
actually
great.
Which is really exciting because I'm like, oh, someone is listening. And most of them were to point out some things that we got wrong. So that's
not great. Then let's not read them.
That's usually how these things go. But I'm just going to read two of them really quickly to address two things that we sort of dropped the ball on last week. One is from Sydney, one of a million that we got about whose body was in the water at the end of last week's episode, which I found out from the internet, like literally 30 seconds after the episode ended on Sunday. And I was like, I can't believe we didn't see it. But Sydney says, for the question at the end of season 2, episode 1, I read in a few places that is Teddy, which is James Marsden's character. This makes me think that when Dolores told Teddy that she has seen the future and they're together, that maybe they duplicated all the hosts as decoys, killed off the duplicates, and have escaped to the real world. So not only some information from Sydney about who's in the water, but like a crackpot theory laid on top of it, which is... These are all decoys in the water.
So. I'm going to say that we watched screeners and maybe they hadn't done like the post on it or whatever. So maybe the final air version of the show, it was Teddy, but not ours. That's what I'm going to say in our defense. I mean, it's not true.
It's not true. Maybe you have some of like Bernard's face blindness.
Probably.
But we stared at that shot because like, the camera lingers on it. We're like, we know this is supposed to be someone we recognize. Like,
and I know James Marsden's face. I've known James Marsden's face since like Disturbing Behavior 20 years ago. So how I missed that, I don't know.
I know. But when I looked again, I was like, yep, there are those pillow lips. I see them. All right. And then we got an email from Shelley about Bernard's injury. I think we had said at one point, we weren't sure, he has this like tremor going on in his hand, and then later he hits his head and some goo comes out. We were like, we're not really sure when that started. And then after we recorded the podcast, I thought about it and I figured it out. But Shelley explains it, which is like, she says, Bernard is glitching out with the brain fluid because he shot himself in the head near the end of season one. That'll do it. Felix fixed him. Felix was like our very friendly tech from last season. Felix fixed him and said it wasn't great, but good enough. And this Shelley's email, which is very helpful, leads me into this great theory that I want to talk to you before we dive into the episode itself. This is not a spoiler. I have no spoilers on this. This is just a theory that I think the Redditors came up with before the season even started, which is the multiple Bernards theory. We see like Bernard touching that scar on his head where Felix patched him up, like when the goo starts oozing out of his ear in the barn in the first episode. We see him like touching that scar. He touches the scar a couple times. Reddit realized that when we see Bernard on the beach in the timeline that's 2 weeks later, he does not have the scar on his head. So either he was patched up in a way that like included some cosmetic surgery, or that's a different host that looks like Bernard, a different version of Bernard, which is possible. Yeah.
I mean, obviously anything having to do with multiple Bernards is a ripoff of the Charles Grodin comedy Beethoven Second, in which Beethoven, the St. Bernard, has puppies. I just felt like I had to get that out there because, for the diehards.
For the Grodin heads.
But that's the, exactly, which I'm sure, we have many in the audience. I think that's a funny thing about the show is that, like, they can kind of do anything because, there could be multiple of anybody. There could be this, there could be that. And weirdly, that should annoy me in a way that the rules are sort of so loose. But, like, actually, I like that because it opens them up to so much narrative possibility.
Yeah, and we should mention, I don't know how hard we drilled down on this last week when we recorded, but when Bernard is in the first episode, when Bernard was in the lab and sort of going through what the symptoms of his critical failure brain would be, it was aphasia, time loss, and face blindness, which just like really makes him the most, like, if we're in Bernard's memories at any point, it's the most unreliable thing you could possibly see, because he might think he's talking to one person and he's talking to someone else. So we'll see how tricky the show decides to get with that, but they've like given themselves the room to be as tricky as they want to be with the Bernard stuff. So yeah. Here we go. So we are open. Season 2, episode 2, reunion. The title reunion, I believe, refers to a number of reunions that we see in this episode. I don't think it's that deep. But we start with, as many episodes do, with Arnold. It's Arnold talking to Dolores, not Bernard. Arnold talking to Dolores in an apartment. And she's in like an outfit that we've never seen on Evan Rachel Wood in the show before, which is like she's a Robert Palmer girl, right? From the Addicted to Love video. She's got the black mini dress on, her hair is slicked back. And she says this thing that will be repeated multiple times in the episode about, have you ever seen anything so full of splendor? And she's in like hardcore rancher daughter mode with her thick Southern accent and all that sort of stuff. And then Arnold says a version of a famous show catchphrase where he says, after a while, it doesn't look like anything at all, which is a version of doesn't look like anything to me. But what did you think of this? Like when it opened, I don't know if you watch Westworld at this point, Richard, and just go to like, I'm not going to try to figure out where we are until they tell me where we are. Like,
I'm just kind of like leaning back and letting it happen. I mean, obviously I need to orient myself, but something that, about this show that I both like and I find it makes it hard to watch is that like in the contained world of the park where everything is dangerous and scary and it begins to feel a little bit claustrophobic despite the vast expanse of it. And so something that took place out in the real world where there are real people, even though they're, we're sort of dealing with dark, sort of sad stuff, like I still felt comforted by it. Like, oh, right. Mm-hmm. The world exists. And like, there is humanity outside of this park. And so I appreciated, getting a glimpse of the rest of, I don't know, humanity, so to speak, in these scenes.
Yeah, and this we talked last week, and I imagine we'll talk more about this, about the way in which the show reminds us of the TV show Lost. And one of the things that Lost did with its flashback structure, you know, you're on the island, you're watching someone who's like sweaty and covered in mud, and then you flash to their other life where they're like, they've taken a shower recently, and Evangeline Lilly has eyeliner on or something like that, and you're like, whoa, like, that's, they look so different. That's sort of how I felt with this, where you like flash from Dolores, like in her, you know, Bandita outfit or whatever she's wearing this season to like this very modern dress, and she looks very clean, and that's what it made me think of, is those like on island, off island flashbacks. But we find out that we are like 35, 36 years in the past, because we've got young Anthony Hopkins as Ford reflected in some glass. We know, I thought I speculated about this last week, but I know for certain now that Anthony Hopkins recorded some ADR for this season. So he's not in the season, but his voice is in the season. So you can just CGI in a glass reflection some young Anthony Hopkins and use his voice. And he basically, Ford accuses Arnold of playing favors with Dolores when Ford says, like, when Arnold says, I don't want to use Dolores for this, we'll use the other girl. We find out later that he means Tallulah Riley's character Angela, but for now we know that we are at a point like before maybe before the park is open, before the park is opened, and Ford and Arnold are looking basically for investors, and they've taken their merchandise out on the town to get investors. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think it was clever the way that they did the Ford stuff. I like that. I like this kind of origin story stuff. I was you know, curious as to how much of that we were going to get, or if the show was just going to be not, well, it's obviously not forward looking. There are a lot of flashbacks, but I was just curious like how far back we would go and how much of this sort of foundational stuff we would see. And I'm glad, because I think it's interesting.
What's even more interesting to me is that I last a trick. Westworld not only pulled a trick on its audiences last season, but it pulled a trick on its actors, in that they didn't tell Jeffrey Wright at the beginning that he was playing a host. And so I almost wonder if last season he had as much of an opportunity as he would like to distinguish between the human Arnold, who he plays 30 plus years in the past, and the host Bernard that he plays in the current timeline. And so I'm kind of looking closely at Jeffrey Wright's performance and his mannerisms to see if he's trying to distinguish the two of them. But we get, you know, we get this nice scene where Arnold takes Dolores to see the house that he's building. We drill down a little bit more on the timeline, because we know his son Charlie is still alive. His son Charlie dying is sort of like a big kickoff for some of his depression and what comes of that. And then Arnold says this interesting thing where he says, like, he feels like humans don't deserve this world that they're in. You know, and he's thinking about, like, maybe it's the robots who deserve to live in it. He hasn't really figured it out yet. And then Dolores, just showing that she has not quite evolved yet, repeats her, like, splendor line.
And Arnold's face kind of falls a little bit.
Right. You know?
And it's reflective of the way that William wanted more from Dolores that he didn't get, and just sort of, it's interesting, like, that they both sort of share this fixation on wanting her to be real and being really disappointed when she's not.
Yeah, with differing results of how they handle that.
Yeah.
And then we flash forward to immediately after the assassination of Ford, or pretty close. We've got this, like, that asshole guest in a tux from last week, whose name I have yet to bother to learn, because I think asshole guest in a tux will do it. And he breaks into the basement of Delos, where the techs working down there haven't even figured out that everything has gone haywire. They're complaining about being on a long 13-hour shift. They're getting a lot of bodies in, but they don't realize that the what did Sizemore say? That was 2 on the nose last week. The inmates are running the asylum.
Yeah, and there's like a sign on the wall that says something like remote, you know, repair station or something. So they're not like in the main, like, HQ complex. They're just people who are stationed further out in the park to like do touch-ups on hosts that are broken or whatever. So I think that's kind of interesting that there are other, you know, techs and whatever scattered throughout the park who are like, could would not be aware of what was happening.
But still, it's kind of, I mean, like the sirens were blaring at HQ. And so it's kind of crazy that like it didn't trigger a remote siren in their little like tech silo to be like, hey,
by the way, yeah, yeah,
it's a bloodbath out there. But we, you know, we have a few distinct groups on the show. And one main group we're following is this Dolores, Angela, Teddy sort of trio, the hardcore badasses. And, you know, Dolores just comes in and menaces everyone and says, you know, the host, the guest in the tux says, like, you don't know what you're up against. Like, she thinks she doesn't understand that there's a world outside of Westworld. And she's like, guess what? This episode is here to tell you that I've been to the real world and I know what's out there. So,
though, to be fair, she went to a party. Right,
like, or a couple parties,
at least
two parties.
Yeah, so like, I don't know, Dolores. Like, you may like you know something, but like not everything.
She's like, I know about crudité,
right?
Past hors d'oeuvres.
I can play the piano.
Yeah, exactly. And then we cut to. I got so excited, Richard, on your behalf. Who do we cut to?
Mm-hmm.
Ben Barnes. He's
Benny
not naked
Barnes.
On a horse. Benny Barnes. He's not naked on a horse, but Logan is here. Which is exactly what Richard was hoping for.
And I have to say, you know, yes, he's cute and I have a crush on him, but like, he's really good in this episode. Like, in terms of expressing this sort of like, this like moral anguish that we didn't really know he had in the first season. You know, I guess maybe he kind of gives into the park, you know, then. But like, yeah, I don't know. I really liked him in the episode and also he looked good.
Yeah. So he's being, you know, his like very like loush sort of self and, William pieces out of some conversation, you know, some glad handing thing that they're doing. So William doesn't get the pitch from. So we know now that this is taking place before Delos bought into the park, before Logan had ever been to the park, before William had ever been to the park. So, yeah, when I said last week that they were going to keep the timeline simple, they're not quite doing that. And we get Angela and then we get a new host that we haven't seen yet, which is he introduced himself as Kichita, which is not the character name he is listed on for HBO. But it's Zahn McLaren, who was, like I said last week, is so good in Fargo season 2. And he shows up with Tallulah Riley's character and they are here to give Logan the pitch for Westworld. Their company is called the Argos Initiative. So that's sort of what Ford and Arnold called their company before it was bought by Delos. So they're like pitching to Delos as represented by Logan, who we find out's last name was Delos, which we kind of thought last season, but this is a confirmation that they're pitching to them. And then I thought this party scene was great. We, the viewer, know way more than Logan because, like, we see Clementine in the crowd. We know Angela's the host. If we've been paying too much attention to the casting, we know Jonathan Tucker, who's in the crowd, is a host, who we'll see later in the episode. We know that, like, Zahn is the host, like, all this sort of stuff. So we know he's surrounded by hosts, but he doesn't. And he thinks he knows, and he's trying to figure out, like, who's the not human. And then the Angela character does this great little twitch of her finger, like a bewitched little twitch of the nose, and everyone freezes. This is my favorite music cue ever. Oh.
I just wanted to say something about the Argos Initiative, that name. Like, yeah. I don't know if it has any significance necessarily, but like the Argives from ancient Greece were the ones who attacked Troy in the Trojan War. So, and like then I guess built the Trojan horse. So like maybe there's something there. I don't know.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
Okay. If you have any ideas about the Argo, the Argonauts, the Argives, like all of that, please do email us.
Yes.
Stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. This is exactly the kind of thing we sort of want to get into. But yeah, also I want to get into the fact that there's some Gershwin in this scene. The host Clementine is playing a tune called The Man I Love by Gershwin, which I love very much. And it comes up again later in the episode with like a little bit more poignancy. But that's a beautiful song, best version sung by Billie Holiday that you should listen to if you want a little extra musical depth in this. But yeah, so Logan samples the wares. And is like, yep, this is definitely something I want to invest in. This is crazy. And his mind is blown. He's like, this technology is so far beyond where we should be. Like, this is crazy to me. Nobody has any idea that this is coming. It's not like they've seen beta and they're like, oh yeah, they finally put some like believable skin on them. Like, no, this is just Ford and Arnold have apparently been like laboring in secret and are like, boom, here you go.
It would like, be like if you like, you know, if at the next Apple event, Tim Cook was like, oh, and here's a hover car. We're like, wait, right? Where did this come from?
Yeah. What? Yeah, exactly. And then we cut from Angela. Angela's had sex with Logan. My read of what Tallulah Riley is doing with her face when she's getting dressed looks like a bit of like resentment and shame because Dolores is watching her from the doorway. Like maybe a little bit of judgment. I don't know. I might be just putting emotions on these hosts that don't have any. But we cut from like the Angela character who's been used basically as a sex bot in this scene to her like stabbing people within her like creepy crown of thorns back in the park mode. And this is where Dolores tries to wake Teddy up. What did you think of Marsden here when he sort of gets to watch all the ways in which his character has died?
He was good. I mean, you know, James Marsden throughout his career hasn't had that many opportunities to go dark like this or sort of aggressive. And so it was, I mean, obviously he's in X-Men, but like, he's kind of like he's kind of the boring beta guy in that.
Boy Scout.
Yeah. So I think it was interesting, and I was glad because, you know, I said last week that, you know, they're obviously keeping Marsden around for a reason. He's a big name, you know, hopefully they'll give him more stuff to do, and they are. And I still like him in second position to Dolores, you know. I think that's a good dynamic, but, like, I'm glad that he had this moment to sort of express himself.
Yeah, and but I'm curious, I mean, I'll be curious to watch the beats of, like, Marsden's evolution over the season, but like it felt like this should be a huge turning point, and then later in the episode I felt like he just sort of regressed back to where he was before, which is like kind of doubting her sort of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's not like it's not like he saw this and all of a sudden he's like, you know, buys into Dolores's message. But I did think it was a fun little inside joke because Teddy died so many times last season, and that became this like recurring joke. So let's show all the ways that Marsden died last year, at least. Yeah. All right. And then we get the return of Clinton Collins Jr. as Lawrence. This, you know, we need to give the Man in Black a sidekick again. Let's just give him the same one we gave him last year, which I don't mind.
Yeah, and William has probably formed some sort of bond with that host. You know, he keeps, you know, abusing him, sure, but like, you know, they've spent a lot of time together.
They dug coal together. But yeah, it's like, it's always nice to see Clinton Collins Jr. And there's a lot of like, what I like, I mean, it's not necessarily worth going over all the little minute callbacks that there are in this next sequence between where they go and who the side characters are. But suffice to say that it's a lot of it is a repeat of what we saw in season one. And what I like about that is that, A, it sort of reinforces this loop idea. Like, Lawrence is just on his loop, you know. But also it makes the park not feel as big. I mean, the park should feel big, but also like, yeah, there's a reason why William in Man in Black mode is bored of his experience in the park, because there are only so many places you can go. And so when he and Lawrence go to a bar and like he finds that like first aid kit, that's a bar we've seen in season one. Like, this is all stuff that we've seen before. They go to Pariah, which is a place that we went to in season one. And so like, I like that familiarity. It's not just about like numb sort of callback stuff, but it's about, this is a familiar territory for all of us.
And it explains in a way why when some of the hosts kind of have their awakening, it's this very sort of hazy, confused, like coming out of a dream thing. Because if you kept living this same repetitive thing over and over again forever, how many years, how many decades, like the kind of compounded layers of all that same experience, but maybe it's different, you know, in little kind of various ways, that would create a very strange sort of psychology and memory. And I think that like moments where they, you know, we're reminded that Lawrence is caught in this loop, it kind of reinforced that.
Yeah. And then they have this discussion, this almost theological discussion about, you know, the man in black, Bill, William, old William, Ed Harris, says, you know, they wanted a place hidden from God, a place they could sin in peace, but we were watching them telling up all the sins. My judgment wasn't the point. We had something else in mind. So this sort of alludes to what other extra thing that Delos, like the thing of like, we've always been watching you. We saw that last week in terms of them literally recording the guest's experience in the park. This puts him in a sort of in a God position, right? Like always mm-hmm. watching, judging sin sort of thing. And Dolores in this episode will also sort of use God-like language on herself. So I think it's sort of this idea, I don't know, like Ford was our clear God figure in season one. And now it seems like a race to who is going to be our God or Messiah in season two. And I think you get a lot of Jesus imagery in this episode, whether it's like Angela's crown of thorns or later there's like a Last Supper sort of setup thing. So that's something to watch about, you know, and they keep talking about the valley beyond the pearly gates. Like there's this, like we're racing towards heaven. Who should be the one to lead us there? Who do we follow to heaven? You know, and the man in black sets himself up as one option. Dolores feels very convinced that she's the correct option. We might have some other candidates as well.
So. Yeah. And like Dolores's kind of messianic thing is dangerous, you know, like it's interesting that we pretty swiftly into the second season are kind of seeing her not necessarily as the hero.
Which is
a kind of fun inversion. And like the whole thing about searching for, you know, the whatever's next, like, you know, to get out of the drudgery of our lives, the repetitiveness of our lives, like it's a maybe on the nose sort of allegory, but it works thematically with, you know, with what they're doing.
There's also this, I kind of want to think about, and it's really half formed, so I just want to plant the seed and think about it. The story of Lucifer, right, who was, you know, one of God's angels and decided he did not want to be God's servant anymore and fell, right, mm-hmm. and took all these other angels with him. So, like, is that what Dolores is being set up of? Says, like, the angel, the fallen angel, the like rebellious fallen angel who winds up in hell and leads all these other people to hell.
Yeah, right? Maybe. But well, Lucifer that was managed to kill God first. Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
A more successful Lucifer. But it's the man in black who says he's going to burn Westworld to the ground. So, you know, hell imagery, heaven imagery, let's just keep it all rattling around in our brain this season, I think. But then we, you know, so man in black says they got to go to Pariah. We get excited because there was an orgy. Last time we went to Pariah, there was an orgy. So maybe we'll get another orgy this episode. Spoiler alert, we do not.
No.
Okay, so then we cut back to this remote lab that you mentioned, Richard, where it's really gruesome, actually. Angela's shoving this Delos employee's face into this burning, like we saw the white goo so often last season as this building, like, you know, polymer or whatever for the hosts. I don't think I ever thought about how hot it must be, but of course it must be to go from liquid to solid. But we see her just shove this guy's face into, and it's like sizzling.
He's screaming, it burns, it burns.
We must imagine that his face is like blistering under this goo. It's just, it's terrible. But they basically extract some information, like the fact that, you know, how is Delos going to react to this? The answer is send 800 men, shut it down one sector at a time, meet at a rallying point on a shore. And like the 800 men and the rallying point on the shore is what I feel like we see 2 weeks later. But that means Dolores knows that she needs bodies to fight, you know. Teddy's like, we got 50. She's like, great, we need some bodies, right? So Dolores sets about recruiting. And then we hop around in time again. We're back to, I mean, and that's another thing that the recurring loops in Westworld do help with, because even when we're disoriented by where we're hopping in time, at least we have this familiar sight, which is Dolores back in her blue dress, mm-hmm. dropping her can of milk. Armistice is the sheriff at this time. So we got to see, like, you know, that actress, always welcome. And then we see everything freeze and a helicopter come in and we meet another new character, who is Jim Delos, head of Delos Incorporated, Logan's dad, played by the great Scottish actor Peter Mullen. Do you have any like projects that you associate strongly with Peter Mullen?
Yeah, Top of the Lake.
Top of the Lake.
He's the villain, ostensibly, in that first season, and he is great. And I kind of tend to think, oh, he's also on Ozark, and he's really good on that. So I kind of think of him as this sort of, you know, mainstay of prestige sort of television, where he's like on a season and is great and then, you know, leaves. I didn't know he was going to be on this, and it was a pleasant surprise.
I find him terrifying.
Yeah.
Top of the Lake. He's not been terrifying in every single role, but he's just one of those people that like looks unassuming, but I am absolutely terrified of him. And so like when we see William and this to anchor us in history, this is taking place after William has visited the park and is now convinced that Delos needs to have even more of a stake in Westworld, right? So he's bringing the boss.
Yeah. So like, yeah. Let's, so timeline wise,
yeah,
we have Logan getting the pitch and being like, all right, this is good.
Yeah.
Then later at some point, William gets involved.
Yeah.
Delos invests some money, enough to build this park, whatever, but not so much yet that they have like full control over it. Is that
right? I think it goes like Logan buys into Westworld, mm-hmm. Because of this pitch that he got. He visits the park all the time. He's a regular. He brings William in, and while he and William are in the park, which we saw last season, he's like, this is why our company needs to like buy a bigger stake. Like we definitely need to have more of a stake. And they leave the park. William agrees with Logan, but for kind of different reasons. And so he's now trying to convince the head of Delos, Logan's dad, like, we need to buy more into the park. And he lays out the financials and he's like, Westworld's going to be bankrupt within 2 to 3 years. Like, we need to flood some cash into here. And Peter Mullen's character, Jim Delos, is like, I don't know that I want to invest in, you know, financially shaky, sexy Disneyland. Like, that's not really for me. And then William gives him the pitch of like, basically, this is the Facebook ads pitch.
It's Cambridge Analytica. It's like, we're going to just mine data. So wait, this is after William has sent Naked Ben Barnes off on the horse?
Yes.
Who is Peter Mullen's son?
Yes.
Excuse me. Who is Jim Delos' son? So does that mean that Logan is alive somewhere?
Yes.
Okay. Not dead in the park.
We'll see him alive later. Like when we see him at that party later, post naked ride on a horse.
Okay, right.
Yeah. But so this is William sort of stepping up in the company, and he is a different person. You know, like last year, William was like this very meek company man, yes man. Like Logan had all this contempt for him. And now we see William on the other side of his park experience, and he's like much more forceful, and he's talking to Peter Mullen's character in a way that like this guy is not used to being talked to. He calls him a cheeky cunt, and I got really scared because Peter Mullen is so scary. But he's convinced that this park, where people can show Delos watching exactly what they want, mm-hmm. without thinking that they're being observed, which is exactly what Facebook is useful from a marketing point of view. So there you go.
Sinister and timely.
Yay. And like we should say that obviously Facebook mining for data has been a thing that has been happening for a long time. Many sites mining for data has been a thing that's been happening for some time. But this was all, you know, wrapped up, I presume, before the Cambridge Analytica story hit so big. So the Nolans get some credit for being a little mildly prescient in just how like familiar this would feel to us, you know?
Yeah.
Then we get this, a really fun meeting between Maeve and Dolores, where we get this clashing of ideology. And there's a lot of reflection here, because if you think about Teddy and Hector and the role they're playing as like handsome, I'll do anything for you, I love you, helpful sidekicks to these like avenging angel female characters. But we get some more sort of messianic language here about enlightening people and all that sort of stuff. And Maeve just seems like uninterested in what Dolores is doing. She says, revenge is just a different prayer at their altar, and I'm well off my knees, which is something
great line.
Sizemore wrote for her. But
yeah,
you know, it's like Maeve's like, I believe in freedom, but like, that just means I'm going to do what I want and you can do what you want. But like Dolores's idea of freedom is like, everybody follow exactly what I say, right? I know it's right for everyone.
Yeah. And I like how they proportion Dolores's awakening to Maeve's, and that, you know, I like that we have two concurrent narratives about what that rebellion will look like or could right. look like, you know? And I think agree. That's very smart of the show to not have it be a unilateral, you know, awakening that yields one result, that where everyone bands together to fight this thing. But like Maeve's like, no, I mean, like, I get it, but I also like have my own personal thing. So, you know, you go do you, but like, I'm not, you know, I'm not interested. I think that's an interesting dynamic.
And I guess maybe the takeaway message should be like, there is no right way for someone to wake up, because if you are, I don't know, human or have your own consciousness or whatever, like there isn't one dictated scripted way you're going to behave. But I also wonder if the show is going to ask us to make a choice. And like right now I'm team Maeve, like hardcore, of like, which is the right way to deal with the dawn of consciousness. I feel like we're meant to believe that Dolores is making a lot of mistakes here.
Right.
Though I could be wrong.
But that Maeve is also maybe being cynical. I mean, it's the kind of thing, it's like, all right, so we all, you know, or some of us, in sort of the dawn of a certain political age, you know, do you like take full action, or do you just, is it enough to just be aware of it? And, you know, like there's some ties to our lives, I think, with this kind of debate.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And then we get that moment that I alluded to earlier, which is, I mean, I'm glad it looks like the Last Supper to you. Definitely looks like the Last Supper to me. I mean, I think anytime like a group of people are all eating
on the same side of the table.
Yeah, on one side of the table.
It's either that or the Red Wedding. I mean, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But here we meet a character called Major Craddock, another new character played, as I mentioned, by Jonathan Tucker. Jonathan Tucker is one of my favorite TV character actors. I love him so much.
He's a Boston boy. And so my sister and I have been following his career since he was a kid. And we've like seen him in like tiny plays in LA, and you know, So when I saw him earlier in this episode where he was just like one of the hosts at the party that Logan was at, you know, during the demo, I was like, oh God, please tell me Jonathan Tucker hasn't fallen so low that he's just like an extra in a scene of Westworld. But then he popped back up and I was happy.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You can earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Yeah, so my wish, you know, like he was one of the people that was listed on the episode as or preseason as being like a new cast member.
Yeah.
And they were very like oblique about what he would be doing. But I was like, he's got to be playing like an over the top host, because this is something that Jonathan Tucker does so well. And I feel completely not disappointed by what is happening here. For those of you who don't like want to go into the Jonathan Tucker backlog, I love him on Justified. He was really good in one episode of American Gods last season. I think I was following him since he showed up on Parenthood. He's also in an episode of Hannibal. Like, he's just been around.
He's in the great Tilda Swinton thriller, The Deep End, from like 2002.
Awesome.
He has a sex scene with Josh Lucas, if that's of interest to anybody.
Yep. We are complete Tuckerheads, apparently, here on Still Watching Westworld. So Major Craddock, you know, is just dishing up some fun, like, sexist stuff to Dolores about how she could go fetch her betters, and then they kill everyone and then resurrect everyone.
This was such a cool scene. I mean, or sort of device, like her showing to him, she's like, all right, like, bring him back, like, you know, like, I thought she was going to put him down again and bring him, you know, like, kind of like dunking someone's head underwater. Like, I thought that was like a really interesting use of the technology of the show as a, like a, you know, in the field. I don't know. I like that.
And it's sort of like, you know, like a Lazarus sort of like, mm-hmm. this is Jesus showing like what he can do to his followers. But she says, you know, if you're looking to get to glory, you won't need his favor. You'll need mine. So if we had any doubts about her Jesus complex here. And then we cut to a different point in time. I really am going to have to like break this down like really hardcore in my write up. But here's how we can know what timeline we're in right now, which is when William went into the park in season one, he was engaged to Logan's sister, Juliet, but not married to her.
Right.
In this party scene, he is not only married to Juliet, but they have a daughter, Emily, who looks about five. So let's say it's like at least 5 years after he got out of the park.
So he knows Dolores. I mean, he's like been, yeah, like he's been through it with her.
So he like decided to hire her as like the pinata, the talent. This mm-hmm. is like one of a few shitty things that William does of like to show Dolores that she has no impact on him and she's just a thing. He this is a retirement party for Jim Delos, who appears to be very sick, and it appears that he's kind of being like forcefully retired, and William is taking over for him, and Jim Delos does not seem very happy about it, but not in a way that he's going to do anything about it, but he's not very happy about it. Dolores is playing Chopin. She's in one of those white intake host dresses that we saw on Tallulah Riley last season. And a fun little tidbit, I don't know if non-Westworld obsessives know this, but the way that Juliet showed up last season was in this like photo that William was carrying with him that like Abernathy found in the dust, and like, and then Reddit figured out that that was like a stock photo that you can find on like stockimages.com or whatever. But as it turns out, the woman in the photo is Claire Nabia, I don't know how to pronounce her name, who was an American's Next Top Model.
Oh, wow.
So they just took a stock photo last season, and she didn't even know. She didn't know until like she watched Westworld that she was, that her stock photo
That's
was in
so
Westworld.
Funny.
So they're like, oh, I guess we should hire her for season two.
Hey, good way to get a job.
Yeah. So because the stock photo model was actually a model that like, you know, is not nobody, they found her and they, you know, she doesn't have much to do. She just looks kind of sour and pissy.
You wonder how much she knows about Dolores, because she's looking at her like not happy to see her.
Right. Logan's dad commands that Dolores stop playing Chopin and play literally anything else. And this is where she plays the Gershwin tune that Clementine was playing earlier, The Man I Love, which is has way more meaning playing it next to William. Mm-hmm. You know, the lyrics are like, he'll come along, the man I love, he'll be strong or whatever, the man I love. So, yeah. And then we see this is what you've been waiting for, which is what happened to Logan after he got off that horse, which is it looks like he became a drug addict. I mean, he's medicating, at least. He's got track marks on his arm.
I mean, he was a mess when he was in the park, too, like a hedonist. Yeah. But yeah, he seems to have. And obviously now his experience of being in the park is really soured. He hates it. I mean, you know, I would guess you would hate it too if that happened to you.
If you got like that extreme saddle sores.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
But Logan is like convinced William has sent Dolores down there to mess with him and stuff like that. And whether or not he did, like. And then Logan says this really interesting thing that I don't know exactly what it means, but he says, my Ben Barnes impression. No. He says, that, darling, is the sound of fools fiddling while the whole fucking species starts to burn. They lit the match. So here's to you, assholes. May your forever be blissfully short. So my question is, what is he talking about? Because this is a Delos function. Mm-hmm. So like Delos has done something that Logan feels like is the end of the species. And is that just investing in the park? Or we also know from season one that Delos does stuff that has to do with like medical advancements. This is something that his dad was alluding to earlier when he was coughing in the party scene. He's like, well, I got an indication that maybe I wouldn't have to retire. And William's like, yeah, we're progressing, but not fast enough. So you should still retire so that I can be in charge.
Right.
So it feels like Delos is working on medical advancements.
And we know they've been taking DNA from guests.
Right.
So you wonder if they're trying to like, you know, download consciousness of human beings into host bodies or whatever, you know. But Logan clearly thinks that that something about the hosts is going to become, you know, sort of dominant over humanity and or something, you know, along
those
lines.
Yeah, it's going to end humanity. And I mean, there's some William. Well, okay, I'm going to get to this in a second, I guess. So let's cut over to Pariah, where, as if this episode didn't have enough, it also has surprised Giancarlo Esposito. Now, I know you, Richard, were like surprised by Peter Mullen and surprised by Jonathan Tucker because you didn't know that they were in the season. I knew that all of that was coming. Nobody knew that Giancarlo Esposito was in this season. And I think he's probably only in this scene, but it's like, what a scene. They're like, hey, Giancarlo, do you want to come in and chew on the scenery for a scene? He's like, sure. Yes, I will do it.
He was a guest at the park, and they were just sort of like, hey, we're filming over here. Do you want to?
Do you want to get really into character?
Westworld is real, by the way.
Oh, yeah. FYI. So he's playing the Elazo character that Clifton Collins Jr. played a bit last season, and he's just really hamming it up. And it, once again, we find out it's basically Ford talking through the hosts at William, because, you know, he says, you know, this game was meant for you, William, and later, and then William says, fuck you, Robert. So this is Anthony Hopkins' character speaking through Giancarlo Esposito. And he gives this monologue about the elephant.
Yeah.
The elephant and the stake, and how, like, the elephants, like, baby elephants, they stake them down. And so then when they're adults, they don't even know that they, like, can get free of that tether easily. It's a fun little monologue. What it reminded me of, because I'm always looking for Jurassic Park parallels, is, like, John Hammond has this whole speech about the flea circus mm-hmm. that he went to as mm-hmm. a kid. So I don't know. I'm always on the lookout for John Hammond stuff because I'm really interested in him. But and then we get this really, really creepy, evocative moment where an entire circle of hosts just shoot themselves in the head and fall.
Orchestrated by Robert.
Yeah. To say, you have to walk this alone. I mean, he lets him keep Lawrence, but he's like,
right.
But you don't get an army. You have to do this by yourself plus Lawrence.
And this is one of those things where, you know, anything where, like, there's been like a clever game set in place or like a scheme or a heist or whatever where it's contingent on knowing exactly what a person's going to do, you know, like how did Robert know that, but, or did he just set up a contingency? Like, should he come by this way? This is what happens. Do you know what I mean?
Wouldn't that be so sad if you like programmed a Giancarlo Esposito level of host and like, he's like, let's take the long rate. Let's not go through Pariah.
Right.
That's fine.
And they're just there forever. Yeah.
So yeah, so instead of an orgy, we get a different kind of pile of bodies, some corpses. That's sort of the trend of this season. And then we get William saying this thing where he says, he built a place of judgment. The place we're going is my greatest mistake. This is where I put in all caps, and you can do your own rat race impression if you want. It's a race, right? Dolores and her people and William and Lawrence. He doesn't get people. William and Lawrence and Dolores and her people are going towards the same place is what it feels like, right? And it feels kind of like a race. And this is something that I don't know if anyone listening is watching Legion Season 2, but this is something that Legion Season 2 is also doing, which is Legion is also the FX comic book series starring Handsome Dan Stevens is also like a really, really convoluted show and hard to follow, as Westworld can be sometimes. But they've made season two really simply. They've made it a race between good guys and bad guys. That's what season two of Legion is. And I think it's a really smart thing to set really, really simple basic stakes
mm-hmm.
on a really complicated premise, right? And so that's the stakes here is we've got William is racing towards something. Dolores is racing towards something. Maeve is racing towards her daughter, which might wind up being tied into this thing. I wouldn't doubt it. And then Bernard is racing to fix himself, I guess
yeah.
we would say. But, you know, just giving these characters really simple through line motivations and then fucking with the timeline to complicate it. So we'll see if that bears out, but that feels like what they're setting up here. So and then we get what I think is the most disturbing moment of the season so far and maybe the series ever, which is something I saw in the trailers and was really dreading, which is William, obviously after his park, as played by Jimmy Simpson, obviously after his park experience, we don't know when.
After the retirement party. I mean, he's older.
Maybe. Is he older?
Yeah, okay. I think he's older. I think they did some makeup and stuff. Yeah.
I think they are definitely messing with Jimmy Simpson's hairline a bit. Like, how do you get from Jimmy Simpson to Ed Harris? You gotta, like, you know,
right.
recede that hairline. I also think, I know that Jimmy Simpson in season one, this is another thing, like Jeffrey Wright, like, he didn't quite know that he was playing Ed Harris in season one.
Right.
This season, knowing that he knows that he's doing it, I think he's doing something with his mouth different.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Where he's trying to be a little bit more Ed Harris in the way that he's like pursing his lips a little bit. I think he's been studying Ed Harris. But we get this disturbing thing where Dolores is naked and William is clothed and he's saying like, I can't believe I fell in love with you. And you're not even a thing, you're a reflection. You know who loves staring at their reflection? Everybody. But he's like, but there's something else, something beyond that, an answer here to a question no one has dreamed of asking. So this, I think, is where we get into that thing you alluded to earlier, which is possibly William and Delos trying to crack immortality, right? Like,
right?
I don't like that, seems,
that feels, you know, like what, you know, if this whole thing is about existence and higher things, like, you know, in a way, like, if you can elevate yourself to immortality, then do you become that higher thing that you're in pursuit of, you know? So, yeah, and I think the whole thing with the mirror, like, you know, you're looking for something in something else, but maybe it's in you, you know, I don't know. That feels like where what's being sort of spoken around.
Yeah, and I mean, Dolores talks about this, like, this idea that the host can't die. So, like, does right. that, you know, because they can't quite die, right? So does that make them gods if they can't die? Does that make mm-hmm. them superior to humans? But if humans can do this, if the humans can upload their consciousness to these little mind eggs that we've been seeing this season and put them into an unkillable body, like, then are humans, then what differentiates a host from a human? Like, all these questions. But then we get, I don't know, one of the more mysterious shots of the episode where William shows her something and he parrots back her line at her. He says, have you ever seen anything so full of splendor? What do you think we're looking at?
I have no idea. It was terraforming, whatever it was. They were doing old terraforming.
It was terraforming, but like it felt like broken, right?
But weren't the machines moving or no? Were they not?
I thought they were just, it looked kind of like the terraform machine or possibly also a broken bridge. But, okay, so this is our Teddy Flood moment of this episode. So if you, the viewer, feel like you knew exactly what you were seeing, terraforming, perhaps, please do email us. Say, like, duh, you're looking at James Marsden, guys. It's fine.
he was terraforming James Marsden.
Maybe we just have face blindness when it comes to James Marsden. Yeah. But anyway, so please do email us at stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. And then the last thing we get is Craddock, Teddy, Dolores. They're looking down at an encampment and Dolores is doing some more of her menacing, like, Jesus thing that I actually find a little boring. And then she says, I know what we're going to find there. An old friend was foolish enough to show me years ago. It's not a place. It's a weapon. I'm going to use it to destroy them. So if William was terraforming, then perhaps that's what she's alluding to, that there's like a weapon that she's going to use to destroy humanity. I'm not sure that's exactly what she's talking about because we never know on Westworld. And so like it might be that she's talking about something that William showed her, or it might be something that Arnold showed her. You know, like,
right. That could be the old friend. Yeah.
Right. We're not sure who she's talking about here. And we're not sure if it's like a literal, like, I would never think that Westworld's like, she's going to find a laser and that laser is going to kill all humans. You know, I think it's some sort of psychological warfare that the hosts can use to destroy the humans. Cause that's sort of what Arnold taught her mm-hmm. sort of in that party scene. I don't know. So like, I would just say, let's try not to get too literal about this idea of a weapon that Dolores is looking for.
Though, right? if what we see younger William show younger Dolores, and then we have, is the same thing as what she's, you know, talking about as the weapon, that then makes the race much tighter because they're going after the same thing.
Right. And I think they are going racing towards the same thing. It's just, I'm not sure, you know, I think William says it's not a place, or she says, yeah, she says it's not a place.
Right.
And then he says, what does he say? Is like, the place of judgment, the place we're going is my greatest mistake. So he thinks it's a place. She thinks it's not. I don't know. I do like the idea of them racing towards the same thing though.
Yeah.
And, same. and we will see what that thing is. But I would suspect it's not like anything physical.
Like a tangible but thing, yeah,
exactly. All right. So anything else you want to say about this episode, season two, episode two?
I thought it was great. I really like that this season so far isn't fully answering questions, but it is clarifying things for us. It's clarifying the world. You know, the first season spent so much time kind of shrouding itself in vague mystery and you know, kind of ominous tones. And I liked that about the show. It was pretty captivating. But like, that's not quite enough to sustain a show. You kind of do have to answer things, and things and the answers have to be satisfying and ask, and then pose more questions, and you know, and I think that thus far I'm pretty into where the show is going and how it's or how they're meeting out information.
Yeah, I liked this episode a lot. I mentioned Carly Rae, not Carly Rae Jepsen, at the beginning of the episode, who co-wrote this episode. Her experience on Mad Men with like corporate. Not espionage, but just sort of dealing like men posturing, men pitching ideas, men doing all this stuff, I think is a really good person to tap to write William and like all the dreams that he's pitching to various people. So I think that was a really good choice. Whether or not that's exactly why they hired her, I think this is a good fit for that sort of ideas. And once again, though, I did like this episode a lot. I do like them shading in like what happened between, you know, to get William from point A to point B in his life, from Jimmy Simpson to Ed Harris. But I got to say, I'm still having trouble with this Dolores and really caring about her. Past flashback Dolores, I find very interesting. But this like Terminator Dolores, I'm having trouble with. So
yeah, I. And I think that a lot of the stuff that's written for her, and Evan Rachel Wood, you know, God bless her, is like really going for it. Like it's a big performance when she's in that mode. But a lot of the writing, it's just like, what is being said here exactly? Like she speaks in these in sort of illusion and sort of vague, you know, grandeur in a way that's like, right, but also like we do need something practical. Like we do need some information from you. So I think that could get a little tiring if it keeps going at that, you know, register.
Yeah. And then the last thing I'll say before we close out is this episode is titled Reunion. Did you have a favorite reunion in this episode?
Yeah, obviously Logan and me. That's my favorite.
It's hard to beat that one. I will go with Maeve and Dolores, but I think you might win this one. So that is it for us this week on Still Watching Westworld. Thank you guys so much for like emails, and we got this great video that one of our listeners recorded, a ragtime version of Barenaked Ladies 1 week. So everyone else, step it up. If your response does not involve a musical like arrangement, then maybe you need to step it up a bit. In the meantime, Richard, where can people find your work?
VF.com. I have a review of Avengers up. And then I'm going to start to do can coverage soon, so just stay tuned for that.
Excellent. I will be doing obsessive Westworld coverage over on VanityFair.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at JoeWroteThis. This episode was engineered by Danielle Roth and produced by Katie Rich and Dave Gonzalez. We will see you next week.
These violent delights and violent ends.
The Run Through with Vogue is where you'll meet all the most exciting people in fashion and culture.
I am Fran Lebowitz, who should be the mayor of New York.
We all support that. We support that.
Very nice.
Nikki.
Yes.
It's been really great being in this beautiful pink room.
All right, Usher, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
All right.
Can you hear me?
We can.
We can.
All right, here we are.
On the podcast, you'll learn how Vogue really works.
Sometimes we'll come in for a second or even third run through until we are AWOK.
Can you tell us what AWOK means?
It means AWOK, Anna Winter OK.
I'm Cho Minardi.
And I'm Chloe Mel.
And we're the hosts of The Run Through with Vogue, where fashion and culture collide.
Join us. It's AWOK.
Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.